At any rate, I think that the feeling he has for young people I don't want to just draw on young people, but for anybody's right to some of his cultural beliefs, whether it's a racial culture or whether it's an age culture or value culture, I think it probably came early on, but I think that it got sort of fine-tuned, which is a word he uses all the time, in Vietnam.
Kind of ironic that he was CNO under a commander-in-chief whose favorite movie was Patton, so it occurs to me.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things I'd like to do is just kind of go back and and start pretty much with going to Vietnam, because
go ahead, do that. I was going to ask you what were the circumstances of his going to Vietnam and so forth.
I think it's a question you want to ask him.
Sure.
Of why he went to Vietnam, I don't know, but I've heard him make the statement. I assume this is going to nobody but you and him, right?
Right.
They moved him out of the Pentagon and out where he couldn't do any harm, because he was a real adversary when he was director of systems analysis. And
adversary of whom?
Well, some of the people that weren't pushing for some of the programs as hard as he was. In other words,
what was it, an adversary of Moore?
I don't know, but
Moore was CNO at that time.
Right, certainly he was to a degree of Admiral Martel, who was then director of the ASW Systems Programs, or I forget what the title was, but he was trying to get more submarines, more destroyers, and he was doing a lot of studies in the ASW area. Which he felt very strongly about. I'm sorry. Anti-submarine warfare.
Okay.
Pardon me.
I know some of them, but not all of them.
No, I should have known. And I think that he just came on awfully strong and tried to run programs himself. I'm not sure that anybody disagreed really in principle with the way he was going, but he was kind of taking over, and that he was doing a lot of studies and getting a lot of visibility, and maybe treading in some areas that were responsibilities of some other people.
He was a rear admiral.
Right, right. But you know, he did it so diplomatically always. And he always cut in his own boss and worked through his own boss.
Who was his boss?
At that time, it was started out to be, I think the first one was Vice Admiral Holmes. And then, who later went to Sinclair Fleet as a four-star admiral. And then, I believe, Admiral Clary, who later became VCNO and a close friend of Admiral Zalmont, came in. And somewhere in there, it was Admiral Fred Bennett, who was a rear admiral in the Washington area and fleet adopt to the director of programs and Navy programs and planning. But he always did it very diplomatically. He cut everybody in, but he was very aggressive in the way he ran studies and in the way he got steering committees together from the Department of Defense and from the civilian side of the Secretary's office and this sort of thing, and got their blessing in various stages and so forth. That
was he there before Nixon went to the White House? He was there under Johnson. He was there under Clark Clifford?
Yes. He was there under Mr. McNamara.
McNamara, too.
Right. Now, going back to other strengths, there's one...
Were those guys aware of him especially, or was he just a fairly anonymous...
Oh, no. They were all very well aware of him. That was another thing I was going to tell you. When he was working at the International Security Affairs with Mr. Nitze, of course, he got to know the people in the Secretary of Defense's other offices there. And then when he went to work with Mr. Nitze as his executive assistant, when Mr. Nitze was Secretary of the Navy, there was always a close association with the people in Dr. Alan Enthoven's shop, which was the Systems Analysis Group under Mr. McNamara. And they got to respect him quite a bit, and he got to know and respect them quite a bit. So that when he became director of systems analysis, one of his methodologies was that he would put together a study, and just let me give you a little example of his success. For several years, I don't know what the figure is, five or six, under Mr. McNamara, with the systems analysis approach that Mr. McNamara used, we had no destroyers or escorts, if you want to call them that, in our new construction program. And he and Mr. Nitze felt that there should be. Now, the way he put a study together was they'd make sure that there was a steering committee of many senior people, including representatives from Dr. Enthoven's shop, or maybe he himself, as well as key people in the defense DDR&E, development, research, and engineering, I guess.
That one I know.
And our own Navy secretary shop. And so by having those people there, the first thing he would do was say, okay, here are all the assumptions that we're going to make as we go into this study. And he'd get agreement on that. Then they would go and they'd work on it, and then they'd decide the mathematical model that they were going to utilize. And so then they'd have another steering committee meeting, and they'd get around the table agreement on what the mathematical model was. Well, if you've got agreement on the assumptions and agreement on the mathematical model, there's no way you can disagree with the conclusion. And so that way, he got everybody aboard, and the conclusions they would come to is that we need X number of escorts, and so we better start building.
Do you suppose that he knew that it was going to come out that way when he drafted those assumptions in that model now?
I don't know. That's a hard question to ask.
How much of it? If he was flim-flamming anybody, it was a pretty high-powered group of people. He was flim-flamming.
No, I don't think he was flim-flamming.
Maybe flim-flamming is the wrong expression, but I mean, if he was, presumably, After all, you did start the story by saying that the previous systems analysis studies under McNamara had come up with no destroyers.
Well, no, the Navy never had any systems analysis people that were sending anything down. What I'm saying is the way they looked at the budget, and the Navy would say, we ought to build some of these, they'd say, what's the justification? And Navy would have a bunch of...
Navy wouldn't have a good justification, okay.
Some esoteric reason, we really ought to have some.
Yeah.
So he went at it very systematically.
And produced a more reasonable set of assumptions.
That's right.
Really. Yeah, okay.
A more reasonable justification.
Yeah, right.
Then the other thing he did was Mr. McNamara's people, you will recall, and Charlie DeBone will give you a lot more detail on all this than I can, because he was right in the middle of all of it. Next thing, of course, was trying to force the TFX down all the services' throat so that we'd all have our own F-11. And he did another study that Charlie knows all the detail of showed, and using the same procedure that got us out of involvement in that, and then another tactical air study that got us into what's now the F-14.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know the real reasons, but for some reason or other...
Wasn't he due for a tour off staff at this point? He'd been on staff a long time, right? Wasn't he due for a field command or something?
He had only been there he got there August of 66, and he went to Vietnam in September of 68. 2 years.
He had a seat tour. He came there.
Yeah, for Mr. Nitze's office, where he made admiral, he went out and had a sea tour as cruiser destroyer flotilla in San Diego that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back to that systems analysis job after about less than a year, I think. But something on the order of a year in the flotilla job.
So basically, he had been on staff for most of the previous years. Well, I'll get the whole dossier. Yeah, that's one thing I've somehow neglected to do, the whole list of jobs.
Right.
Anyway, did he take you with him out to Vietnam then,
I'm going to get to that in just a minute, but let me go back to one other question. That is, I was kind of telling you all the things that made him such a strong CNO. I mentioned his debating ability. The second thing is, he's always been a student of history, but the work in the international security affairs gave him a political military background, or enhanced his political military background. And when you get up to be CNO, these two things really are really vital. And the third thing was his background for 2 years working in the systems analysis area, because he remembered most all of those studies, and he knew as a CNO which ones to update and draw on, so he had good cogent and well justified reasons for all the things that he was trying to get in the Congress and get in the joint staff and so forth as far as force levels.
Is he himself a mathematician of any accomplishment?
Well, he was a valedictorian in high school, but he's not had any postgraduate work in the math area. No.
You do some math at the academy, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And he stood, I forget where he stood, high in the Naval Academy, too. So
he was high up in his graduate.
Right. So you end up, you have a man that had a normal college and high school background. He was good at anything academic, but he's not had a whole lot of postgraduate work in anything since then. Yeah.
There are some Navy people who are mathematicians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's not one of those.
Right. But he's got a very logical mind, and this is a big help. Very logical, good debater, strength in systems analysis and logic and development of justification, this sort of thing, and a strong background in political military. And boy, you can't beat that.